Well, hello and welcome to The Gilded Thread. I'm Irene O'Brien and this is the first of a six-part podcast series that I'm thrilled to be sharing with you, in which I'm speaking with some brilliant, colourful, fascinating women and men down the line about their lives using their style memories to share their story. Some of the people you'll know well already and some you'll get to know over the course of their episode. My guests will talk me through what they wore during some of the most memorable moments. We'll discuss their early influences, the part fashion has played in their personal or professional lives, the evolution of style as they have witnessed it over the decades, and also a bit about what they have learned along the way. First up is the inimitable Celia Hulman-Lee. Model, stylist, agent, TV presenter, columnist, to name just a few of her very fashionable hats. Celia has decades of experience in the fashion industry, as we know, and she's carved out a career that is thriving today. In fact, you'll hear her phone buzzing away in the background throughout our chat as she manages photo shoots and models, all the while speaking with me, multitasking like a pro. And I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I was really struck by Celia's work ethic and her unapologetic drive and her absolute love for what she does. I particularly enjoyed hearing about her start in modelling and the many roads she took, literally and figuratively, to get to where she is today. We sat down together some weeks back on what turned out to be the morning after she was awarded Most Stylish of All Time at the VIP Style Awards. So that's where our conversation kicks off. I will start off, Celia Hulman-Lee, by saying thank you so much for coming and having this chat and being one of the first people on my podcast.
No, not at all. I'm thrilled. Thank you. I'm delighted
to be
here.
And, you know, I was really looking forward to having a chat to you about style because we know you in so many different stylish guises. And then, as fortuitous, as luck would have it, it's fortuitous that it's the Monday after the Style Awards and we were planning on chatting anyway, but I've just been saying you were probably chatting to lots of people because tell me about your award.
Yes, well, it was really totally unexpected. I didn't, because it wasn't in the category, but Michael Doherty decided to do something this year because it's 17 years on the road, the VIP Peter Marks Style Awards. And there are so many awards now, as you know. Everyone is having awards for this, that and the other. And this is the this was the beginning of all of this. Mm-hmm. And it started with a launch in the, used to be the Four Seasons at the time.
Yeah.
And it was the best man, best dressed lady and best dressed man. And I won it. And, you know, it was back that far, back that long.
So you won the first one.
I won the first ever VIP Style Awards. Amy Riley Highland was the editor at the time. It was massive in VIP when it came out. Really, really big, because there wasn't, excuse me, there wasn't the social media. There was no, was there mobile phones? I can't remember. Somebody tell me. You can answer that. But that was 17 years ago. So there wasn't that, you know, there was none of that. You know, you were depending so much on media print and, you know, journalists and fashion columnists and gossip. You know, there was a little bit of that going on even then.
Yeah.
So you were depending on that to get the name out there. And because I was working, and, you know, I was like grassroots, if that's the word I'm looking for, all over the country, from the top of Mayo, beyond it, up to the north, from the north down to West Clare or Cork. You know, I was involved hugely during the time of the Troubles with the Cooperation North movement, where we brought all the designers from Ireland to the north, to the Guildhall in, no, to the Guildhall is in Derry, to the big City Hall in Belfast, above that right now. We went there first. And then all the designers in the north came down and worked in, did a show on the RDS, which was huge. And then we did the same thing again in Derry in the Guildhall. So, you know, I'd been around and I had, you know, and I was actually responsible, and this is true, for the BBC Clothes Show coming to Ireland for the first time. It was Jeff Banks came over because he was the partner of Selena, not the partner, but the co-presenter with Selena Scott. And I brought them over because Cooperation North and the Irish Peace Institute, which it did turn into, they had great, they could get things done.
Okay, yeah.
That's the word I'm looking for, because this was all for the North and the peace and whatever. So they were able to contact the BBC, etc. And I came up with the idea, they made the contact and we got it all together. So I've been around the block, really.
And was that ahead of those First Style Awards
yes,
as well?
Yes.
So your name was already on the
way,
map
way
for
before
those.
That. I was doing the Rosa Tralee Fashion Show, whereas you would have to put your foot to the top of the N7 and your other foot at the end to keep the crowds out, that just to go to the shows,
gosh,
you know. Like, I mean, phenomenal stories and, you know, I was hugely known, you know. And I think VIP realised the power sort of I had when they started doing shoots outside of Dublin, and I was able to call in shops from everywhere, you know, and get them in and whatever, you know, that I was that well known.
But yeah.
Not, you know, I wasn't at the balls in Dublin. I wasn't part of the social scene. RTE, you know, took 2 days to get up to RTE. You know, you were up and you know, it was always difficult. You know, the Independent were always very good to me. Always very. Mary O'Sullivan. I met her at a wedding one time. And she was looking at the glamour out on me. So that was another start to something. So really and truly, I had been out there, but not in the social scene in Dublin or the cool scene or that, you know, I wasn't really known. But by God, there was house, you know, there was background and lots of groundwork done,
So. So I'm going to bring you a little bit back. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a very young Celia, and I'm sure she couldn't have imagined what was ahead, you know, with all these decades of fantastic work and so much in the industry. When you were a little girl, like, what are your earliest style memories, or who influenced your style, or who did you notice wearing clothes at that time?
Well, my mother came from a family of 14, and there was seven girls or six girls. I think it was six. Forgive me for that one now. That was six. And they were all very tall. All the Meehans, which is my mother's family, were all very tall, very blonde, very willowy. And they always dressed beautifully. And my grandmother was an only child.
Okay.
Imagine, and have 14 kids. You can imagine that. In Limerick. She was from Clare, actually, West Clare. And she never went outside the door without her hats and gloves, ever, ever. And my mother and my aunts were the same, always dressed up. So I lived in that kind of, they loved their clothes, they loved the movies. So I got a little bit, I got definitely, you know, thing, especially my Auntie Betty. She was terribly glamorous. She was the youngest of the girls, about 6 foot, you know, long, gorgeous. And then my own mother, of course, never went outside the door without her purse, of course, her bag, nice bag. Obviously had to be matching. Shoes had to be matching.
Really?
The gloves and a hat. Hats and scarves.
Yeah.
And when she passed, I still kept an awful lot of hats and scarves. I have them and her bag.
Well, where do you think your granny had gotten that style from? She was an only child herself.
She was an only child, but she was Joyce, as they were. They were from Clare. They were very refined. She was always very refined, and always the hair beautifully done, and you know, yeah, she, what they had, sure, they didn't have much, no one had much those times, but she always had herself nicely turned out, always. Yes, she did. At my wedding, she was a terror for wearing black dark glasses.
Oh, really?
And she had a big hat at the back and an edge-to-edge coat. So I picked it up along the way myself.
Between your aunties and your mom.
And then, of course, one must remember, you know, as Alan Hughes said to me this morning, you know, but I said, Alan, if I got it wrong, it would be a sad day. I started modelling at 15 and I've never left the industry, never. Yeah. So if you can't pick it up, you know, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
It's my
trade.
Well,
I'm absolutely certain that there is a percentage that's learned, but I just think that you have innate style. And I know that I've read before that you were in Irish dancing, and then you know, that your aunties were so glamorous as well. So I suppose I'm wondering, you know, prior to even 15, prior to when you started modelling, was that something that interested you, the style or the performance?
I haven't said this much because every young girl is the same. I adored fashion, always loved fashion.
Yeah.
Started my first job in Roach's Stores, imagine this, in a boutique. No, I started in Bulger's, cutting twine. I was in the shoe department. So the twine was to, the senior assistant would be cutting the paper, and then she'd wrap it. I'd have the twine ready.
Okay.
That's the way it was then. And then this man approached me, and the boutiques, the 60s.
Yeah.
He was opening a boutique in Limerick, and he was from Dublin. And he was a great pal of the father of the crowd who started with Pamela Scott's.
Oh,
so
right.
I know the father.
Yeah.
And I know the boys. So, before that, anyway. So that was there in that store. And then Roche Stores were looking for somebody. They were opening this new department, fashion. So I went and I got it. So it was the Mods and the Rockers. So there was this big cave. And I was working in that. I must have been only 16. 15, I started modelling, maybe 16, and I did the short little kilts, polo necks.
And was this
socks,
in work?
In work,
yeah.
In the cave. The 60s were just gone. Clothes went from being like this to the complete change around,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It was like them and us. It wasn't like there was a mix. There wasn't. There was a complete down the centre. You know, my mother and my aunts and people a little bit older than I, women, when their little edge-to-edge jacket or their suit or their trouser suit or their nice, we were there in pink and green and kilts and short corduroy skirts and denims, if we could get our hands in a pair.
And did it feel exciting?
It was incredible. It was, you know, revolutionary fashion doesn't happen. A side mix, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, that kind of
seismic shift.
It hasn't happened since, I don't think. Maybe in this new, more sporty looking, sporty mm-hmm. from the street to all of that, maybe there's a shift there. But it's not as colourful or as interesting as when we were doing it.
Well, they refer to that time as the youthquake.
Yeah, that's it.
And I love the 60s. I love everything
about
the 60s.
So I was in the middle of that.
Exactly. Well, I always think, oh, God, I would love to live through that time. And they say that, you know, whereas prior to that, little girls kind of dressed like their moms, little versions of them.
But
this was the first time that they were really kind of rebelling. But did you... Obviously, it was exciting and there were new styles. Mm. But did you realise the significance of what was happening? Could you feel that at the time?
No, the only thing that I knew there was a significant shift in lots of things. Music was the same.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles and that. I wasn't into the Stones, no. I was into the Beatles in a big way. And the hairstyle the Beatles had. I mean, before that, they were all cut and, you know, good haircut. And you had this. And I always remember in my uncle's house, my aunt's house, actually, my auntie Teresa, she's 93. She's still alive.
Oh, fine.
And in the house. And every time the Beatles, like Top of the Pops, you know, or something like that. Or, oh, look at their disgrace. Or cut
really?
Their, and turn. And I know, Jesus, what's happening, you know. And the mini skirts were my grandmother that was, you know, give out to me. I used to hide it and then I'd pull it up and I'd be rolling it up, you know. And there was a whole mannerism about everything. The way you stood, even. We all got this humpier stance, you know, kind of cool, you know. And the Mary Jane shoes were all the go. And you didn't stand, you know. We're all kind of standing, kind of like legs, kind of cool.
Yeah,
Twiggy then.
Yeah.
Twiggy was all the rage and it was all pouty, legs turned in. We all got a different kind of posture about us.
Yeah.
It was actually hugely... You know, it was a huge seismic, what did you call it?
Seismic shift.
Seismic shift it
well,
was, in
because
fashion.
Because it Roche Stores then, so are you saying that they had this specific area
for
the youth?
They just built this area. They were a huge, they're a family, Irish family, as you know, and they were always very visionary. I wouldn't have known that, but I used to know all my families because not their shopping and the whole of Limerick went in there. So they must have seen that this was happening. So the Mods and the Rockers and the 60s and the kilts and the thing. And I was working in there.
Weren't they so progressive to
they were
embrace
unbelievable.
It as well?
Yeah, yeah. And then this gentleman came to Limerick and he was actually a guard and he opened the first ever boutique in Limerick and he came after me to work. So
poached you from Roche's?
Poached me from to work with them in Limerick in a boutique, in a basement. This was all the thing. Everything was down and dark and fab.
Emulating and, the London boutiques,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he used to travel all the time with the father of Flair Line, it used to be called, before it became Pamela Scott's.
Yeah.
They were the first people. They were huge importers. They'd sold clothes all over,
because
they were the only people bringing in all this kind of thing for the boutiques, the jeans and the French polo necks that were all the go and everything else in between that came out. So he used to be with them and then he opened boutiques. So I went working for him. So I was in the middle of it all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and I was modelling as well.
And was it around this time? Were you spotted? Did you go looking for the work or what? How did that
actually
come about?
There's a girl, she's in my phone there, shall before we finish, this lady called Anne Maloney. She was rather beautiful, very, you know, pouty, bit mad, crazy. And she was modelling before me. There was a modelling agency in Limerick called Murray Mulch. I was only just 15. I was mad into the dancing. Didn't think I could ever be a model. Those times, like, I came from a fabulous family, but they're a working class family. Mm-hmm. And those girls were different, you know. It was a different kind of a lifestyle. You didn't think you could be like these, looking at them. So she started her own agency and she saw me in town in Limerick and stopped me, and that was the beginning of it then.
Do you remember what you were wearing that day when she stopped you?
No, but I remember a coat from then. It was check, big green check, and it was a Peter Pan collar, double breasted with box pleats in the front of it around, and I had white wet look boots.
Oh wow,
that I remember. And I think back, I remember that. I have a lot of my own stuff, you know, still. Bits of it, not a lot of it. I did an exhibition in the Hunt Museum about 3 years ago. And you can ring and check this out. 37,000 came to see it.
I wish I had been there to see that. Yeah.
All my clothes through the year, through the different, I've Paul Costello, I've Brian Well, I have Pat Crowley, I have E.B. Organson, you know, bits I kept all, like Fanny Reynolds, who first went to go to America, show in Saks. She was from Bunratty, you know, so all that was there.
Yeah.
So
and so when she spotted you that day, I was wondering, were you already kind of embracing those fashions at that stage? Or what did she say to you? Because did you take her seriously?
She just said, I'm opening a modelling agency and I'd like you to join. Of course, I jumped at it.
Yeah.
You know, and she started and that's where I started. So I stayed with her for about four years, I'd say, maybe more, maybe less. And it wasn't that busy. It was busy, but not busy. But I was modelling in between that as well. Yeah. For a lady in Shannon who had a kind of an agency, but sort of a Maeve Lynch kind of an agency for all the tours in Shannon Airport when they used to come in, like Kennedy.
Like coming in from the States.
In the States. Yeah. A million of people a day used to come in. They eventually found their roots, you know, and you couldn't have come to Ireland before that and all the troubles and everything else that went down. But the amount of tourists that started to come in back in the late 60s, maybe early 60s, late 60s, beginning of the 70s, crowds that came through Shannon were phenomenal, as well as all the film stars on the transatlantic flights over to America. Everybody stopped off. So there was this big glamour thing about Shannon. So I used to model all the Jimmy Horan just was on the top of my tongue, I'm after losing it, the crochet. Jimmy Horan. Did I say Jimmy Horan?
Jimmy Horan,
There was another crowd that used to do Divine, John Hegarty. So all that kind of thing used to go on. So then I was doing that for a while and then I opened my first for open Celia Lee's boutique and I was really, really good at the buying. And I concentrated on that. I kind of shifted back a little bit from the modelling myself because I had two babies.
I want to go back to one thing about the modelling. Is it true that your first job modelling was a pair of hot pants? Or is that true?
that was in Shannon. I'm trying to think. I was being asked to do loads of things. And I got a call the day before. Because you're in the phone. Now the feckin' Jesus to get us those jumps. Because it was only ordinary phones. Oh, you often left a message. Or somebody always answered your phone.
Yes.
You know, took a message, always answered the phone. Because it could be very urgent. So there was always somebody had to be able to answer the phone. So probably in the store, would I come out to Shannon that the first jumbo jet was landing?
Okay.
So
what year was that? Do you know? Well, I'll find out.
Well, it was 60s, all in the 60s.
All in the 60s.
60s. And I went out anyway. So Dermot was his first name. Dermot Cullen, no, Dermot. Could have been that. And he says it was Dermot anyway. So he came out anyway and he said to me, you know, I remember getting off the bus at Shannon because no cars. Got off the bus, he collected me and he just into the car, around the back of the control, the tower, the the old tower,
yeah,
around the back of that in the car, out into the tarmac, and I said, no, a ladder up against the door, up the ladder and into the cockpit, into the wing.
You went up there to get the photo taken?
Yeah, I went up and into, the wing is out like that, the engine.
Oh, yeah, underneath the wing.
Underneath,
yeah,
yeah. Big photograph of me, like, up in the air.
And was that the hot pants?
That was the hot pants. I went everywhere.
And when you were being asked to put these things on, like, did any of them ever feel scandalous? Or did you ever...
Never
did they ever
thought.
Feel scandalous? Or did you ever think, what'll my mom
no.
say? Or there was never any of that.
No,
everyone
no,
knew
no,
it was fashion
no,
and it was groundbreaking.
Was fashion. And, you know, that was the time that was in a James Bond, like, was... You know, the movie was out and all the girls was running around in bikinis. It was that time,
yeah.
You know, it was slagging women and, you know, it was whistling
yeah,
and
yeah,
cheering
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
jumping. And now there was a lot of else, other things went on, I suppose, but thank God I never saw it and wasn't exposed to it. So we just did it.
Yeah.
You know?
And was it around that time that you met your husband?
I met my husband when I was 15. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. He was living in the same area as me, actually. He was here, we're saying here, and I was... maybe up the motorway and down a little bit.
Yeah, so a few hundred yards.
A few hundred
even.
Yards. No.
And had you known each other from around town?
No. I used to see him all right. But kind of, I don't know whether I used to see him. I can't remember. But he spotted me, of course. I would say that.
Well, I like that. I like that. I'm sure he'd say it too. And do you remember what you were wearing when he spotted you? He'd probably remember.
He might remember.
Was it in a club or was it on a beach? Because I heard a couple of...
He saw me in a club, mm-hmm. the Go-Go Club, only orange juice. There was never a drink.
Yeah.
I didn't drink till I was about 23.
Really?
Never drank.
Yeah.
You didn't drink those times, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I never drank. I don't remember drinking. I drank then, of course. But, you know, he, it was the nightclub. Yeah. And he spotted me and he was with another girl. And he took her home and came back and looked for me.
Oh, he was on a date there with another girl?
Was, yeah.
Well, wasn't he the gentleman to at least bring her home before he came back?
Back to me.
And was that? Is the rest history?
The rest is history, really.
Really?
Yeah, we've been together. We're married 45 years or 46. Christ, I'll be murdered. 45, 46. And we're nearly together 50 years. Close enough to it, yeah.
And so during that time, so he was there for the start of your modelling and
everything.
When you're working these jobs. So did you open the boutique together or was
together,
that something very much
together.
You were doing?
He was a lot stronger than I and believed in me a lot more than I believed in because of the atmosphere and the, not the atmosphere, but the social class that was there back in those times, 40 years, 50 years ago. Limerick was a bit like that. And I say this out loud, don't care who's listening. You know, it was run, you know, it was difficult.
Was there snobbery? Was
there was all the snobbery everywhere. And mm-hmm. there's still snobbery, I can
yeah,
tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah,
listening to people talking,
yeah.
you know, recently about somebody. And I got that, you know, and I didn't have the confidence. You know, sometimes you can ignore it. I would, obviously the world is a better place now. Well, it's a better and a worse place. You
yeah,
can make your
yeah,
mind up there,
ways.
Pick which you want. But it's more open, more, you know, lots is out there. You can, you know, everything is out there.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing out there.
Yeah.
You know, now everything is out there, which is in one sense is great. In another sense, you can have your issues about it. But for me, it wasn't like that. But he believed and he used to push me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And had you always kind of the boutique at the back of your mind, having had that experience with the other retail? Was that something that you always kind of wanted to do or was it a natural progression?
Always. It was more my husband than me, you know, and we brought Monsoon into Ireland.
Mm.
We were the first people.
I'm impressed enough with Monsoon, but am I correct in saying as a child of the 80s, I was very impressed with this. Were you the first ones to bring Pepe jeans in?
We were, yes.
Pepe jeans, they used to be the greatest gift that any
we
of us could,
Pepe jeans
could get.
Down there, yeah.
And they were such a colourful brand. We hadn't really seen anything like that because Levi's were king. And then, but Pepe had a different take.
Yeah.
Quite feminine, actually.
Quite feminine, yeah. They were good.
How did you know what to bring in, you know?
I was good. I was always had an old eye and I always had an eye for a model.
Yeah.
Like Louise Kennedy, Louise Cooney is from me.
Yes.
Laura O'Shea was from
yeah.
me. Kira Buckley is from me.
Mm-hmm.
Becky Costello, they do a lot of work up around here now.
Yeah.
Aoife Hannan, the first Miss Universe, is from me. I could go back. There were so many of them. Neve Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Neve Kennedy was Miss Ireland there last year, the year before. She's from me. Jesus, there's another load of them. There's
mm-hmm.
about six or seven or eight of them that are current,
mm-hmm.
that are still on the scene
yeah.
in different aspects of the scene, whether they're working out of Dublin. They all... So going back further than that, I always had an eye.
Yeah.
I could I got it right with models, not all the time, mm-hmm. and got it right with fashion, mm-hmm. Not all the time, but mainly, you know.
Well, was the agency then born out of that? Because did you need to scout models to model for your boutique?
No. I had the agency before I even had the shop.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it was a bit of two, the bit of the both, yeah. really. But everybody knew, excuse me, I had a reputation as a model before anything else.
Yeah.
So the shop still used me, even though I had my own shop.
And, yeah.
Like, they never said anything. They just used us anyway. And then the agency started to grow. And we had a factory at the time. We were doing so well. And then my husband, he often, you ask him, has he any regrets? And he'd say, no. And then he thinks. And he was actually manufacturing husky jackets, all those quilted.
Yes. Yeah.
And 80 people working for him. And the recession, the banks and the oil crisis came in.
The 80s? Right.
And that stuff skyrocketed and the banks wouldn't carry you. And this was going on and that was going on. So that went. And it... we decided then we had enough and we'd left the shop go. So
was that a difficult decision in the
end? It was very, very, very difficult. But it was very, very difficult. But you must never think that anything is difficult that you don't learn so much from. Mm-hmm. So to me, there was no wows or no depression or no nothing. Get up and get back out there and get it right. So I threw myself into the agency and, Jesus, we never stopped mm-hmm. from one end of the country to the next.
So do you look back on that time now and think, well, maybe the agency wouldn't be what it is,
no,
were we not
it
forced?
Wouldn't, because you can't do everything all the time.
Yeah.
You can't be brilliant at ever, you know, you can be, but you really, you know, I can't do three jobs.
Yeah.
Like the television links into what I do.
Yeah.
If I was doing weather on the television and then having a modelling agency, that wouldn't work.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it was
one
an extension
links,
of
everything
your...
links in for me.
Yeah.
So I was... We threw myself into that and came up, you know, always coming up with ideas like the Jim Kemmy International Student Awards where people came in from all over Europe and always doing things like this. Riverfest bait them up to do a fashion show with that. You know, we're always trying to inject.
And you're generating these ideas all
yes,
the time.
Yes. Yeah. We all, you know, now I have two other minds, which makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
They suggest things that I mightn't have.
Yes.
You know, it'll take them time to... get, you know, gut feeling, you know, but we invited a lot of the influencers and bloggers to Limerick. And it was my daughter spotted that we weren't doing that.
Yeah, you know,
so it's a new world there as well, all that social media and influence and all that kind of thing.
But you embrace it hugely.
Yeah.
Have you found over the years, have you always been open to kind of the evolving nature of the media and of the industry that you're in? Have you ever rallied against it? Or was there something that happened that you thought either you go with it or you get left behind?
No, you go with it or you will be left behind.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Fashion is like, it's like a baby born every 6 months. You mm-hmm. know, it's just like I get so excited. You know, I get so excited about when the season starts again. You know, like the autumn, the Rosa Tralee show's coming up now, and it's all first biggest and the biggest autumn winter show in the country in the Dome in Tralee. There'll be about 2,500 people at it, and it's all autumn winter clothes. So, you know, it's just a passion. And I know that, you know, when social media came out first, I was Lord Jesus. But then I started to understand Facebook, which is the one I'm best at. And then they're all saying, you have to do this, you have to that, you have to this, you have to that. So I get a bit of help with all the others. But I, you know, there is no way you cannot be embrace a particularly social media and especially the fashion industry, the beauty industry and the hair business.
And it's so visual and it's instantaneous
is.
As well. That's the way people
and,
are.
Yeah. And the same with, you know, the health industry. I think it's just... it's just those businesses and they know, as I know, that you have to be on it, whether you like it or not. And there's nothing, you know, the only thing I just find is the social media making stars out of people that sometimes they don't know what they're talking about when they get...
No, and making stars out of people and then being the very ones to rip them down.
Yeah.
I find it, I definitely struggle with it all.
Yeah.
But I think, you know what, you have to stay true to yourself. And I think once you stay true to yourself and you know how much you're putting out, we're in control of ourselves.
We are.
But I think... maybe everyone let that start controlling them for a while.
Yes,
you know,
I think
and,
so.
And it has to be up and it has to be this, you know. So I'm going to bring you back a little bit because I wanted to ask you about what you wore on your wedding day.
I wore a beautiful white dress. Actually, you'll see that on, if you go into photographs, you'll find all those things on in the gallery. It's high neck. Anne of a Thousand Days had just come out. The Seven Wives of Henry, or Anne of a Thousand Days. No, it was a big, big movie, blockbuster. Huge movie anyway, and I loved it, and I loved the style. Square neck and the big sleeves and the dress down and out, and the headdress was like so.
I have seen a picture of that. I remember the headdress. Where did where did you get the dress and the headdress?
The headdress was made for me by a lady who actually was well known. She drew, I think she did all Twink's hats and everything for her. Twink got married. It was Pauline's Hats in Limerick and Henry Street. She made it for me. And the veil came out like that.
Yeah,
the dress I got in a store in Limerick. It was a bridal store. Small. She did fashion as well as bridal. And it was a round neck and see-through sleeves. Long sleeves. It had to be long sleeves. Come around your arms. Long sleeves with a cuff. And cut in here and then down. It was nice. I preferred the headdress than the top.
Yeah.
It's very 60s. You'll see it now.
Yeah.
Very, very 60s.
Did you hang on to the dress?
I think I still have part of that dress, but the veil and headdress I held on to. And then when my daughter made her communion, and I still have that, I had the pearls and the thing from the headdress. So we took them off and put them on her headdress.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely to continue on?
Yeah.
I got married May 12 months ago and I wore my mom's wedding dress. Now she got married, mom got married in July 1969. So it was again a high neck, long lace sleeves. And it was so long. And she was taller than me anyway. But so I just got it taken up at the front. So you could see this part of my legs. And then we kept the But you know what? There was something lovely about continuing the story,
amazing.
You know? And she loved it. But she would only tell me on the day and afterwards. She said, oh, it was the greatest honour and the greatest compliment. But she never wanted to say it ahead of that in case she influenced me, you know? But also, because I love vintage and because it's really funny. I make decisions for work about style all the time, but for myself, I'm always torn.
No, we're all
it
the
kept
same.
It easier that I could just say, okay, I'm going to wear that.
Yeah, that was, well, I kept that. The dress, I think I have part of it. I don't know what happened. No, but I definitely have it. Some of the veil and the headdress is in, and I have it. My daughter's communion headdress is my
so
headdress.
Sweet. Yeah. Do you remember your first TV appearance?
Yes, it was. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. There was a Michael something to go around the country on Nationwide, or I think it was Nationwide, or maybe there was a different name for it then. And they used to come around Bunratty a lot.
Oh, yes.
And around there. And I remember doing a TV thing one time, and they couldn't get it because Shannon, the flights were coming and we were hours doing it. But before, I was a judge. Oh, yeah. Gay Byrne came to Limerick, to the Savoy, long gone now, one of the most beautiful buildings in the world. How we didn't lie naked in front of it when they were knocking it down.
Got demolished.
Absolutely massive, beautiful cinema, a massive stage, all the little where people could sit all around.
Like theatre style.
Oh, theatre, the most beautiful Savoy theatre. Big, big entrance. Jesus, what was wrong with us in Limerick? We let that go.
Oh, listen, same in Dublin, things have happened. It's scandalous. You know, you look back and it's absolutely scandalous.
And I did a show there for something and I did fashion at it. And
modelled or produced?
Fashion show. Produced a fashion show at the modelling agency at the time. And Gay Byrne went back to Dublin. And then I met this producer who was, Mary went back to Dublin. And then there was a wedding and Mary O'Sullivan was at it.
Mm-hmm.
This is now linking.
Yeah.
And Mary O'Sullivan saw me and she said, Gay Byrne was down here last year. And I was there with the hat at the wedding, big black hat and the black and white dress. I always remember they were Kilfedmore in my hats. I always loved hats. I got that from Pauline's Hats. She was a great friend of mine, no years older than I. Great style in hats, and she always up putting hats on me. So I have a great love of hats.
Yes.
Always have.
Yeah.
What
well,
do I love?
You,
hats and coats. I love.
Yeah.
So I remember there was always someone at the end of the phone, because you know, I keep going on about that because it makes Jesus a phone, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody rings my daughter's house anymore, me on the black phone.
Yeah.
But she said she saw me in Limerick. So I was a judge on The Late Late Show. That was my first major with Michael Martell.
So had this come from Gay Byrne coming down that time?
No,
you,
Mary
and then
O'Sullivan.
This lady seeing you. Okay,
O'Sullivan.
So that came
and
first.
Then Mary O'Sullivan bringing it back to Gay Byrne, and he had seen me. He said, oh, I remember that.
Isn't that extraordinary? So did you know at that stage kind of the power of your, now we talk about branding and everyone's a brand, but did you know the power of putting your best foot forward and, you know, making an entrance, making yourself known, embracing style, being your own brand, or was it not?
Yeah.
Were you mindful of it?
I was mindful. The word brand, no. Mm-hmm. But the word of putting your best foot forward, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. The word brand, I didn't understand and wouldn't have understood that. But I knew, you know, you are what you teach, you are what you sow, you are who you are. You know, if you are the product that you're pushing, then you should look the part.
Yes.
No matter what. So I used to, I was head of a modelling agency, and to me, that was very important that I looked the part.
Yes.
You know, it was a different time.
Yeah.
I didn't even know product. I used to be hoping it would lead to another job, meaning with the agency behind me. So that's how that
thinking
came about.
Thinking of the future in that way. And I wonder, as kind of time has gone on and, you know, you really have become a brand.
Yeah.
And you are, everyone knows your name. Everybody knows who you are. And I wonder how you feel. We touched on social media there, but people have more opportunity now, I suppose, to be their own brand because they can put it out there. But how did you get your name out in the first place? Because there weren't that many. Were the social pages big in the papers?
No, I'll tell you when it started. Yeah, well, like Terry Keane, she used to go around the country. She'd be invited as the Great Don Air to Compere show. And, you know, the Independent did move out and did cover some things, and
yes,
always went for me.
Yeah.
Always looked for me if I was or compared. Then I sat on the Satsumbra Fashion Oscars in Dublin with Eddie Shanahan.
Oh yeah.
You might know Eddie. The lady who used to run the Sunday World, Terry Keane, and actually I have a photograph of her granddaughter there at the Style Awards.
Oh yes.
And I look at her, and every time I see her I get a little bit, you know, thinking, Terry would have loved
Yes.
And there was that kind of thing. And Michelina Stackpool, the designer, was very famous. And she was in Palace Kenry in Limerick. And she started using me to model for her. And then she'd come to Dublin. I'd be meeting all these people. So it was kind of this sort of thing.
And it was then that the photos were being taken.
And I started appearing. And then I did the Late Late Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was really, if the truth be known, you know, I did very, very well. But if the truth be known, it was when I started gigging on Ireland AM, that the whole country.
Which is, it's you extraordinary to think then that's come full circle, because you have just won most stylish of all time. Is that what it was?
Yes.
And really, you got the Ireland AM gig from the first VIP
Style Awards. Yeah.
Isn't that extraordinary to think that it would, you know,
it would
kind
come
of
around?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just, I'm living in a kind of a bubble today now, trying to get my life and my head around myself.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, they say luck, you know, you make your own luck at times.
Well, don't they say, I can't remember who said it, but the harder you work, the luckier you get.
That would be a very good quote, and I would certainly agree with that.
Yes.
That would be more my take on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there wasn't many out there pushing themselves as much as I was pushing, but I had the others behind me, push, you know. And, you know, there was a trilogy I was doing that, they all coming down from Dublin for that, so they all got to know me, you know.
Yeah.
And in between there, the Satsumbra Oscars went on for 3 years. I met Selena Scott through that, I met Jerry Hall, I met Britt Eklund, I met so many people through that, you know. And I was a judge from the west of Ireland.
Yes.
Because I knew exactly, I knew what was going on around the country.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that's really, but I think, really and truly, it was every week, and every week I was on the TV, television.
So from 17 years ago, you started that slot and you did it weekly. Leaving the house. Talk me through your morning for Ireland AM.
I get up in the morning, and we used to leave at 4:15. 4:45 was a bit too late because the roads were disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Think back. Ask anyone. Think back.
Yeah.
ask anyone checks in, or they were that size.
Yeah.
And when there was an All-Ireland, if there was an All-Ireland, and some of them stayed over, the buses, or they stayed over, you know, coming down to Cork, or because you still meet them at the Cork traffic,
yeah,
or going to Galway because there was no Galway bypass. Mm-hmm, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was all, you actually would be on the ditch. They'd be out in the middle of the road. Like, it was unbelievable. The tailbacks were, you were looking at 20 hours. So we'd leave at that hour.
And you'd collect your models?
And you'd have to, we used to come in this way.
Yeah, the N7.
In the N7, in along here.
Yeah.
And we'd come up the roundabout. No, there was only turn off. That wasn't there.
Yeah. Because we're at the Red Cow.
Yeah. That wasn't there. And we turned down into it.
Into Ballymount. You know,
into Ballymount. And then, we used to come to Ballymount this way.
Mm-hmm.
This way, not the main road.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was entrance
yes,
into it.
Yes.
You know, we used to come
at it the other side.
So that went on. And would you believe, when I was your age, then I go back to Limerick and maybe travel to, because it was early in the morning. That's why I was able to keep going and keep the business going. But my daughter-in-law now run it, as you know, most of the time. I was able to still get out to my shows because I'd be back in Limerick just to finish at 10 o'clock into the car. On the way down, it's closed down now, the petrol station. They must be doing something to it. Hop in there for tea and a big roll. Back to Limerick. I'd be in Limerick before 11:45. Do my day's work and then go to a show. That's what I did. And then...
Every single week.
As I asked them, they have to cheer. I was at all their weddings. I was at all their christenings. I was at everything.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you know, Mark and Alan... from day one. I mean, you'd see me so friendly with Maura Duran. I was with Maura there.
Yeah.
I was with Claire Byrne there. I just came in on the tails of Amanda Byrne. She'd just gone.
Yeah.
Claire Byrne. Then Sinead Desmond.
Mm-hmm.
And any of them, you know, I was there on the tail. And then about 4 years ago, influencers starting.
The landscape changed a little bit 4 years ago.
Yeah, 4 years ago. And they started experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because they were looking at the hits and the, you know, and that's like, so.
The social engagement online.
So it suited me because I was getting really, it was getting a little bit too much and I didn't mind because the grandchildren were coming along. So I would do twice a week. And then
Twice a month. Yeah.
But be two a month. And I continued that. That happened about 3 years ago, twice a month. And then Oxendale started. I met Oxendale's then through, I got a phone call from Tara O'Connor. Jesus Christ. She was handling the VIP Style Awards.
She's
the boss, Tara. Tara said, there's a company in Dublin doing Simply Be, and they want to know, they're looking for somebody down the country. They feel their market is around there as well. And we told them you could do that. And that was it.
Well, that's been a marriage made in heaven, hasn't it?
It's
been a great partnership.
A huge partnership. So it was Simply Be. So I used to produce her shows and then show them on the, and they used to buy their slots on Ireland AM and all of that. And then Brenda said, we're changing you, we're taking you out of that now, and you're going into Oxendales with us, and we're going pushing Oxendales. So I'm 8 years with them.
Yeah.
So it has been nice.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's not as much work.
No, and I suppose as well, I mean, I don't imagine you would have ever said that you were jaded from the weekly slot, because you get on with it and you do your work.
Yeah.
But I suppose it does come down to the fact that eventually you want things to evolve with you.
Yeah.
And that's why I look at what you do with Oxendales and I think, wasn't that really smart?
Really
smart pairing there, and that you can evolve together in
evolve
that way.
In that.
Yeah.
And I still then, tomorrow I'm in Cork.
Yeah.
And it's a different store, and I'm there the following week. So I do it when Oxendales are finishing now.
Yes.
So I'll take the odd one.
Absolutely.
You know, it's only up the road for me, less than an hour. I cannot believe it.
And I'll less than an hour.
You know,
it's a lion. It'd be a lion if you got to sleep till 5.
Yeah, and I'm going now, I'm saying to myself, you know, because I remember hail, rain, storm, blizzards coming up that feckin' road. And I never left them down, and I never didn't turn up. I was always there.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you that. And now they're building a road from Cork to Limerick, but I'll probably be gone at that stage, dead or completely retired, you know, when they finish that.
So,
I mean, it'll be 5 minutes to Cork.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I've done it all.
Yeah.
It's been the hard one. You know, it's been plenty of earned stripes, I can tell you.
Yeah. And you know. But are you getting to enjoy it now? Can you say, now I am enjoying this process?
I tell you.
Or do you still have something in you that you think I need to be working on?
Yeah. It's unfortunately, that's the problem. That's the problem, darling. I'm how will I put it? Of course, it is a little easier because the work comes easier if you want it. But I don't treat it like that. I still keep my arms around the agency as much as I possibly can, even though I'm step back, keeping an eye on it. You know, it's a kind of a thing with me. I'm not able to let go, really, if the truth, you know, I really do think I'll have to just pull down the curtain. You know, I'm not able to step back because I'm listening and watching too much.
Yeah.
And I'm very in tune of the industry.
Yeah.
And my knowledge of it is phenomenal in all different ways, from production to shows. I mean, you could send me in here and ask me to do a show and fit the people in and find out how we could make it work. I can, you know, I can do anything like that.
You can make any of it happen.
I can make it happen.
But why do you feel that you will need to step away in such a dramatic way? You know, like...
Everyone says, but I don't want to be... I can't look in.
Yeah.
I can't, because I just drive myself insane. I want to get involved, get annoyed. Something is going wrong. I need to bloody well go away to the beach or somewhere and stop. You know, because I won't. I'll be watching. Because I'm not blind or deaf or dumb. Mm-hmm. And I know when a model is wrong. I know when that isn't right. I know when that checking garment isn't working.
Yeah.
You know, I'll know.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I know after all my life in the industry? You can say... Because I love it, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, I love watching it and enjoying it. And,
yeah. Well, it feeds your energy and your spirit.
Yeah.
I can tell when you talk, you know. I get to use some of your great models on my slot in Orsley today. And there is something about a Holman Lee model.
You just
know where they've come from. You know. And I'm wondering how much of that is... that you spot a certain person that you know is right, or how much of it is the training and the nurturing, or is it a combination?
No, it's here's what it is. All I need is the height. If she's size 16, that's fine. If she's size 8, a bit worried, because we need them a little bit 10s for Ireland, for us anyway. And she's tall, I can work on her. Once she has that. Faces, we can work on. Usually they're young, they mature, they turn. Individuality in faces is good. You don't always have to be that beautiful or that thing. A little bit of quirkiness is gorgeous as well.
I think so.
We can work on the hair, because you can do anything nowadays. You can fix it, have it, whatever. But the most important thing for me is how you walk and how you carry yourself and how you pose and how you show off the garment and how you move as you carry the garment. That to me is the most important thing of all. So... nobody goes out in a feckin' ramp unless they're trained how to walk.
Yes.
And if I haven't done a class now in a few weeks, and I turned to one of the young ones and I said, I'm telling you now, you won't see me for a few weeks because I'm too busy. But by Jesus, if you don't listen to what I'm saying about the shoulder, the walk, the carriage, how to move, how to pose, how to work it, you'll be back here again in another 6 months when I'm ready to come back and train again.
Yeah.
Because it's been very busy. And I haven't been able to do a class. And I love the classes.
Yeah.
So the girls let me do the classes. They come and they want to do them. But I say no. When they do it, I see something wrong. So I'm as well off doing them. But it's the training. It is the training and the attitude behind the scenes. And that they have everything.
Yeah.
And they have the right attitude and the right mentality. Not throwing themselves around in the back or sitting down in the clothes or...
Yeah. Well, I would have to agree with you because, as I said, you know, you can see that stamp as well. And I know no matter what I work on and how beautiful a girl or how great her walk is or whatever, if I come backstage and I find that the clothes are in a ball, I'll just never book that person again. Do you know?
No.
It's just, it stays with you as a stylist. Yeah. I think it does.
Throwing them there. No, you've got to, you know, I'm always saying to them, you know, ask, can you do anything for the lady that's employing you?
Yeah.
Ask, can you help?
Well, they all
ask,
do.
You know, you must do those things because that means you'll be back. We have enough to do as a stylist, enough driving us up the wall. You know, you're going live television.
Yeah.
You're being paid. You have to get the message across of what you're
Absolutely.
Trying to sell. If you don't do that, then you don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
No one gets paid. So we all have to work as a team.
Yeah.
So it's the training.
Yeah.
I swear.
Who taught you how to pose? Because I am telling you now that there are times that I'm getting a train back with James Patrice, and sometimes we just look on your Instagram and we think, how does she do it? Like, sometimes you'll hold a clutch bag in a certain way, and I think, if I did that, I would look like the biggest Egypt. But what, were you trained, or did you train yourself?
I train. I keep saying the truth because I'm stupid language, but I was always really, I shouldn't say this now, as somebody in Limerick that might remember me, if you can find anyone that remembers me on the ramp, I was always brilliant at posing. If you look back at my old pictures, I used to study the garment. And I say this to the young ones, but you see, they can't be like that anymore. It's not cool.
Yeah.
And like mannerisms in everything, like you couldn't think a walk changes, but it does. There's different movements, and the movements comes from the posing and the hands. Other than that, it's just a walk. And then you build it up and build it up to if this comes in or this comes in or, you know,
Moving your arms. Moving them.
You know, throwing the leg out instead of in, you know, like we were in the 60s, everything turned
folding in.
You see, it's mannerisms that make it different, make the whole scene different. But really and truly, you know, it's I used to have them, not in the past 5 years, I'd say, but before that, I'd have them posing with the bag. We'll do a bag tonight, you know, up to the shoulder, down in the hand, down by the side, up on the shoulder like the queen in here holding it. But you don't do that anymore.
No.
It's not the cool thing to do. The world has become relaxed and cool and sneakers and fucking, I hate those clothes. But I would you believe I was in the, I never thought I'd see myself in them. But I do move, but I move sometimes when it suits me. But this whole relaxed way of dressing, I don't see much style in it and much design. It's a bit similarity and similarity. I mean, I was in the south of Spain, I was in London, and I was in Barbados. And by Jesus, all I had to do was that. And I could
see a
puffer jacket, straight legged jeans, and those sport shoes and the bag. I mean,
it was a uniform.
The world.
Yeah.
So that throws me.
You want to embrace individuality. And you have enjoyed wearing some of the most unique clothes, you know, over the years as well. So you have an appreciation.
For it. You know, amazing.
I don't want to keep you too much longer because you've given me loads of your time. But, you know, when you talk about your life and you talk about the agency and your family and your experience, one of the characters that always strikes me is Limerick.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you speak about Limerick with such fondness and more, I feel like more than a hometown. What is it about Limerick? When you think of Limerick, what is it that you feel?
I think it's because everyone I know or love is there. And I'm being very, very lucky. I haven't had it so lucky in my earlier days. You know, wasn't much of nothing around, much of anything, as they say. But look, that's then and this is now. And I only know love, really, from all of it.
Yeah.
But everywhere I look in Limerick, I have a friend or somebody. It's...
No, but I'm not surprised you're getting emotional because the way you speak about that, it is a great love of your life. A great love of your life.
What is it about it? I think it's just that everybody that I know is there.
Yeah.
My mother, my father, they're all dead.
Your memories.
But my memories are there. Now, of course, the best thing ever, you know, you get this luck. I keep thinking luck comes in decades as well.
Yeah.
I have 5 incredible grandchildren. You saw them now. They're unbelievable. And they're living there, you know. And I am blessed to have that as well.
Great joy.
Great joy.
Yeah.
There's great joy. There's great, you know. Oh, Jesus, I might be able to move that out.
Would you look at them? What age is the eldest?
This is the eldest here, if you can see. I don't know how you can get that off.
But
anyway.
I think you have to go back in. Ah, look. I can see them in between the icons.
He's now 8 months. And they would look at her right again.
Isn't she a little doll? I can see her in between here with the little big smiling.
She's beautiful. And that's Henry. So I think it's because they're all there.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and they've always been all there. If they weren't there, my aunt and all my cousins, like I have cousins everywhere in Limerick,
yes.
you know.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I have friends everywhere because, you know, we came from a family of 14.
Yes.
Only 3 of them went abroad. The rest stayed. So you can imagine.
Yeah.
Cousins and aunts and friends I have. So, and it is a great old city.
Yeah.
You know, I give out like shite about it, but who doesn't?
Well, that's the way you would with family. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? There's that love that you appreciate something, but you can still give out because you want to make something better. But by God, if someone else gives out about it, I'm not too happy about that.
But I have, you know, the calls and messages now I got, the calls and messages that I got from...
About the awards.
About the awards have been phenomenal. Yeah. And the papers have been on and City Hall. Girl there, Laura Ryan is her name, she's one of the bosses there, straight on, so yeah, texting, so they are very proud, and I'm very proud, and you know, it has been good to me.
Well, you've been a fantastic ambassador for Limerick as well. And before I let you go, even though I could speak to you all day, but thank you so much for your time, I really appreciate it. Before I let you go, you know, can you tell me why if someone said to you, oh, fashion is fickle and style is, you know, vacuous or whatever, is it important? It's been important for your career, which of course has been part of your life. But do you feel that there's a time when it is important to be stylish?
I feel, this is my opinion and mine alone. I have huge respect for myself and my appearance. And for me, now speaking for myself, I have always tried to make myself look the best I possibly can. I have no interest in making an excuse if I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
And that's normally if I'm only sick. I feel much better when I look better. I feel it affects my mood. It affects me as a human being. And it's a wonderful confidence boost to keep yourself looking as best you possibly can. Because people see the effort that you put in. And personally, people say, I couldn't be bothered, it's not me. You know, that's their opinion. But it is a job, and it is time consuming. It is pressure. It is an art that you have to work at. It is something that you have to be able to look at your clothes and play with them and mix them. It does not come easy. But if you want it, it's something that I thoroughly enjoy. But that is my opinion on style and looking good and what I get from it.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great way to wrap things up. Celia, thank you so much. A really good chat to you all day. Thank you.
Not at all, darling. So there you go.
So there it is, the first episode of The Gilded Thread. A huge thanks to Celia for taking the time to meet with me and for being so generous, not only with this chat, but with every encounter we have professionally through our styling work. And a massive thank you to you for listening. This has been a passion project that's a long time in the making, and I'm really just so delighted to finally have it out there and that you have taken the time to tune in. Tune in? I don't know. Do you say tune in relation to podcasts? Well, there you go. I did it. So speaking of tuning in, please do so again next episode, where I'm going to be speaking with my original style icon. That's my mama, Anne O'Brien. And I really enjoyed my chat with her. So I hope that you will too. Have a great week, guys. Thanks for listening.